My God, it's full of stars. I have no idea why that's funny to me.
Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. My name is Steve Benson. That's Paul Schultz. And nothing you're about to hear is true.
What episode is this?
128.
All right.
This is episode 128 of the Don't Panic Radio Show. One episode closer to meeting our ultimate goal of one infinity episodes.
I feel like I've been here before. I got like deja vu.
All over again?
Yes, all over again.
Yeah. So I was reminded of the, you know, week after week, 128 times now, I've said, nothing you're about to hear is true. And then I say, nothing you've heard was true.
Right.
And I know why I originally said that. And I generally, if I'm pressed, I'll give a good answer to why I say that and why we say that and what this show is all about. But I was reminded today when a good friend of ours, Mr. Woody, posted, the facts don't care about your feelings, as his status on social media.
I saw that.
And I, on a whim, posted, and the truth doesn't care about your facts. And then, as I often do, I thought about what I might have meant by that after I wrote it.
Sometimes, you know, you just got to let it come out of your mouth and then figure it out, you know. Like Beck lyrics, for instance.
Or crappy food. Truer words.
This is true.
So I thought...
But did you see my reply to his comment or his post?
The Kentucky Fried movie?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey.
These men have been here so long, they don't even know. How long have we been here? I don't know. These men have been here so long, they don't care. How long have we been here? I don't care. Obviously, I didn't watch it. I just went on memory.
Put this man in cell number one and get him a drink. Yeah.
So the thought process was a collection of facts does not equal the truth.
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those things that people love to say when they're having political discussions. They like to go, oh, the facts are getting in the way of your worldview or whatever, right? Well, yeah. A collection of facts is nothing more than a collection of facts.
Right, right.
And it does not comprise the truth any more than if you're looking at a Monet painting, but you're only looking at one square inch of it, and you go, well, this is shitty. This doesn't look like anything, and this is not even interesting.
Right.
And you go, well, what you're looking at indeed is a Monet painting. There is no disputing it. It's not a fantasy. Nobody's trying to trick you. Nobody's trying to fake you out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take a step back and look at it, you get a whole different perspective.
Yeah.
Right?
Especially with a Monet painting, because those things are huge.
They are, man. We were in, I remember the first time, you know, you and I grew up in the country.
To say the least.
There were no art museums in Springfield Township other than your comic book collection. And when I finally met people in my life who had access to these things, like I'm sure you did. You probably knew all about this, but I didn't. And I barely accepted ZZ Top into my life.
You know, you had yet to accept ZZ Top into your life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And you finally convinced me to accept ZZ Top into my life.
I remember exactly how I did that, but that's beside the point. Please continue.
They were standing at the door. They were knocking on the door, and all I had to do was answer.
That's right.
They loved me, and whether I loved them or not, they loved me, and all I had to do was accept them into my heart.
Is it a coincidence that there's three of them? I don't think so. The Holy Trinity. Mm.
That's right. The Art Institute of Chicago is where I first actually saw actual, like, original works of art.
Yeah.
That weren't nudie pictures that you had drawn for me.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And I was like, it was before I had seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but I was exactly like them in the first time I went to the Art Institute of Chicago. I was standing there just like, I was like the dude, I forget his name, but the dude that played Ferris Bueller's friend.
Cameron.
Let my Cameron go. But he's standing there, and the way he was just standing there, like, that conveyed so much. And I remember looking at Monet paintings and just finally realizing that painters aren't trying to paint the thing. They're painting what they want you to see, what they want you to experience, what they want you to feel. And you can't,
exactly,
you can't do that just by drawing the thing, right? Mm-mm. And so they had a name for him, artist, I think. But, you know, with his, he was doing pixelation before pixelation was a thing. And so,
yes, yeah, he was dadaism and stuff like that, yeah. They called it, yeah.
Which is not to be confused with dadaism.
That's right.
It's Salvador Dali? No way, I don't know. Anyway, the thought process being, it's sort of like deconstructing the image.
Yeah.
And, anyway, I was just amazed. Think of each one of those dots as a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And the painting is the truth.
Yep.
An ant can never see the truth. An ant can only see a collection of facts.
And just what makes that little old ant think he can only see a collection of facts?
Did you know that there was a chameleon the size of an ant?
You know, I think I heard that on an awesome podcast somewhere.
He goes through life worried about being trampled by a millipede.
How does he know what a millipede is? I mean, honestly.
That's a good point.
Until he runs into one.
That's a great point. I had not thought of that.
Well, artists, see, the thing about artists, artists will, like, give you their interpretation of what they want you to see, or they want you to see what they want you to see. If you want to see a pond full of lily pads, that looks like a pond full of lily pads, go take a picture of a pond full of lily pads.
Or go stand in front of a pond full of lily pads.
Exactly.
And look at it.
Exactly. But as far as the artist's interpretation goes, yeah, that's the power of art. That's what it does.
And the more we learn, the more science uncovers about how we experience the world, the more we figure out that artists depict the world way more accurately than a photograph or science or anything else ever will. Because if you're standing there looking at a pond full of lily pads, you're not seeing and experiencing a pond full of lily pads. There's so many sensory messages going to your brain that you're basically having an experience of which the pond full of lily pads may be a part.
So. And the colors that the artists choose aren't real. I mean, I've seen plenty. You've seen plenty of paintings that are realistic, but they use different colors to, as we talked to James and I talked about a while back, to evoke certain emotions out of you. And if you just want to see lily pads, go look at lily pads. I don't know how any of this ties into your facts and your truth, but.
Well, what I would do is I would use a green crayon. It would say green on the side. because to use anything else would be wouldn't be real. Lily pads are green, so I would use the crayon that says green, mainly because I only have 8 crayons in my box because you know we're poor. So
that's right.
It would be the green one. That is enough about that.
This bores me. Is anyone up for a game of basketball?
So, speaking of ZZ Top, I was thinking about that earlier today. I was thinking,
yeah.
I said to myself, I said, so, why ZZ Top? And why, and how important was Tejas to my childhood and my upbringing?
Tremendously so.
But it's hilarious that I don't, like, listen to it on a daily basis. Once in a while, I'll pull it up on YouTube because for the life of me, I can't find the CD I bought. I bought it first on vinyl, and then I bought it on CD, and I ripped it to my computer, and now I can't even find where I ripped it to my computer, but they have it on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube is wonderful for that. I don't even look for CDs anymore. I don't even look at MP3 files on my computer anymore. I'll find it on YouTube.
Hey, did you know for like $8 or $9 a month, you can subscribe to YouTube Red and you would have access to all that all the time, like even offline, and you could legally like download that stuff?
I don't see how long. I don't think that's going to last very long.
This episode brought to you by YouTube Red.
Oh, yes. I mean, yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, you can get anything you want at any time from any device.
Now that we've said YouTube on this episode, it'll probably get flagged on their servers.
You know what I'll do? I'll put it on backwards. It'll be like dir, yeah, dir, because I'll go red backwards too. So
dir boot ue. So that having been said, the thing I was thinking about is when we were kids. And, okay, here goes the old fogey thing.
That's right.
It was all about albums. You didn't go, hey, did you download this song or did you hear this song? Or did you go, well, okay, we had 45s. But even 45s with singles had a B-side. So you always got another song with it. So now that you bring it up, you've never told me the story of how you got me to accept ZZ Top is my Lord and Savior.
Well, first of all, regarding 45s, the B-sides were typically better than the A-side.
I mean, as long as we're talking about albums, one of my favorite albums growing up was The Killer Bees. We've talked about that before. It was a whole album of nothing but B-sides.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of my favorite songs to this day came off of that.
Yeah, Springsteen was good for that. You go by like the Born in the USA single, and the flip side would be Pink Cadillac, and Pink Cadillac beats the hell out of, you know, Born in the USA. That's just how he was just the king of that stuff. But no, I remember I was living in the basement of at the house at the time, and we were working on some D&D stuff, and I was talking to you on the phone. And I had like, I think it was a Rio Grande Mud on, I said a gigantic, you know, the gigantic stereo with the lid you lifted up, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And we had speakers running all over the basement. And I was playing that, and I had to, my mom had called me to do something. And you and I were talking, we were doing some D&D shit. And I'm like, hang on a second. And I put the phone by the speaker and went upstairs, and I had to do a chore or something, and I come back down, and you're like, what was that? I'm like, that was ZZ Top. You're like, oh, that was pretty good. You got any more? And next thing you know, you're hearing like, I'm at your door, like with like an armful of ZZ Top records.
Looking at the phone. I'm like, what the?
Yeah. How did he go home and hang up the phone and then come back? That's pretty much how it happened.
You jumped over that damn hedge. You
know, yeah, I ran through the Schmidt's yard. Risking bullets and...
Get out of our yard! Although they were from Wisconsin, so they would be like, or Ohio or somewhere.
Wisconsin.
Get out of our yard, eh? Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah, do I have any more?
I had all of them.
You know the problem that happened with ZZ Top with me? Like, I would say Tejas was one of the most important albums for me growing up. I say one of them because Attack of the Killer Bees was pretty important, too. But by the time I got to college, everybody knew who ZZ Top was. So it was no longer like, hey, I know about this band that not very many people know about. And they're awesome. They do this, you know, eclectic, like, rockabilly mixed with rock and roll, mixed with country, mixed with blues, like tons of blues influence. And, hey, guys, check this out. There was none of that in college. It was always like, well, hey, what kind of music do you like? Oh, I like ZZ Top. Oh, Eliminator and Terminator and whatever Inator.
It's like, Tomator.
So everybody already knew who they were, but they knew nothing about their older stuff. And now suddenly I'd be like the hipster guy. They'd be like, oh, hey, man. I liked ZZ Top before they were popular, man. And, well, actually, I'd have to correct that because by the time I found out about them, they probably already had Terminator out and they were already popular, except I hadn't heard of them. But I could be like, hey, man, I would have liked ZZ Top before they were popular if I'd known about them, man.
Yeah. Something like that. I think Eliminator was out at that point, and even that wasn't too god awful, but it went downhill pretty quickly after that.
Yeah. She got legs. Well, it'd be like the people who are like, Smashing Pumpkins, I like Siamese Dream, but after that, man, it wasn't all that great. How about that as our Facebook question of the day?
What's that?
Your most important album growing up.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Go.
Doesn't sound staged at all.
How about if I try the album most important to you growing up? Because I thought of this as I was contemplating what the question of the day should be. At first, I think I happened upon an idea that may be this part of the secret that we had not quite figured out yet. Like if we said favorite. Blah, blah, right? Favorite Coke or Pepsi? What's your favorite, right? We're asking for an opinion. People are fine with sharing their opinion, but it's still not that personal because, I don't know, you're just picking, right? But if you go, what is an actual thing for you? Not your opinion, but something about your life, right? I think that may...
And your life don't care about facts.
Your life don't care about facts.
What a time.
Wow, that's one of my ringtones. I don't know who this can be. I better answer it, though. Hello. Hello. It's Diplomatic Panda. Oh, my God. Thanks for calling on your own phone instead of from that... Pachyderm's phone. I think he prefers something other than Pachyderm. Well, I get it. I know. He prefers a lot of things that I don't prefer. So, all right. So, what's up?
Well, I was just listening, and you were talking about important things from your childhood.
Were we?
I think so.
You were talking about ZZ Top. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. I just wanted you to know that there's a lot of good bands out there and other people like other types of bands.
Oh, I get that.
Like there's the Beatles and George Harrison.
Wait, wasn't George Harrison part of the Beatles?
I guess. I don't know. I can look that up.
I think she's trying to tell us something.
What are you trying to tell us?
I'm just trying to tell you that John Lennon was good, too.
I think he was part of the Beatles.
Was he?
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. You know what another one of the... I know we've moved on from the favorite album segment.
Maybe you should say bye to Diplomatic Panda so she doesn't get upset.
No, but I won't get upset. You can say whatever you want, and I won't get upset because I'm diplomatic and I'm nice.
That's true. She is nice.
Although I would never say I'm nice. I've just been told that.
True. Anyway, another album that was really important to me was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
That was by the Beatles.
Well, not the one I had.
Here we go.
Mine was by the Bee Gees.
Oh, those boys have nice voices.
Yeah, I think I'll bet you liked the Bee Gees and Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Funny you should mention that. I do like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome.
Bye. That's one of the things I miss. Now that we have cell phones, you can't angrily hang up the phone anymore. Like that always used to be a signal, like a symbol of, and then the other person on the other end would hear that and they would know you were mad. Now what do? You punch your cell phone? What do you do?
And you can never dramatically win an argument by taking your cigarette and flipping it on the ground and smashing it and walking away because nobody smokes.
Good point.
You look really dumb going, and then walking away. It's like, what's wrong with him? Does he got like, he's having some kind of fit.
If you threw your vape pen down and smashed that, people would be like, you just smashed your own vape pen. How's that supposed to make me feel? You know?
Exactly.
You're destroying your own property at this point.
Plus, if you do smoke, that cigarette's like $2. So you just wasted $2 on the floor.
I remember we were on a vacation recently and we stopped we were in like rural Michigan. You go to rural anywhere and you get to experience aspects of your childhood that you forgot about.
Yeah.
We go to this like little gas station convenience store thing, which it ain't no BP. It ain't no Village Pantry. It ain't no Speedway. It's just a marathon.
That's right.
And then just a building with random snacks in it, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing's where you expect it to be. They don't have all this shit that you expect. The bathrooms, like I've been in state parks with hole in the ground latrines that were nicer than the bathrooms in these things, right?
Yes, yeah. And you had you'd have like a huge like tire rim with a chain on it that has the key on it that you have to drag to that shitty bathroom just to get in there.
You know what's weird? This is the second time today somebody's mentioned that. I know you may not understand what I'm talking about, but we were talking about, I was talking to somebody about something and they brought up the jerk and how at that gas station, they're like, was it a concrete block or was it a giant wheel? Like I think it was a wheel. I think it was a tire rim,
I believe,
or a wheel rim. And now you brought that up. Something strange is going on.
I just instantly think of that when I think of gas station bathroom.
The funny thing about this particular convenience store is their bathroom was not locked, and in fact, handwritten sign on the outside of the bathroom door said, "Be sure and knock before you go in." Because the handle doesn't really, it didn't say all this on the sign, but I figured it out. The handle doesn't really work. The lock doesn't work. Nothing works on the door, right? The only thing that works on the door is it does close. You can't see through.
You can't see
through. Other than that, and how's a man supposed to properly evacuate his bowels to the end point and then properly clean himself afterwards? When at any moment somebody could come barging in, you can't relax. You got to be in a relaxed state.
At that point in a man's life, we are the giraffe at the watering hole. Where, you know, when he's down there and he's got his legs spread out and his neck and he's drinking the water, he is absolutely vulnerable from all forms of attack. That's what we are. With no lock on that door. You know, you can't relax enough to like really, you know, let it all go So you're like, you're half prepared because, like, it, you know, a gunman or a ninja is going to come through that door. So you got to be ready. So you, your pants are like just above your knees because you can't have them all the way down because you're just, you got to be ready for anything. That's weird. Yeah. You know, you can't relax.
Well, if somebody walks in on you, the last thing you want is for them to see your pants down around your ankles. We talked about judgment last week. That is one thing. Feel free to judge on that because that's just weird. You're in a public bathroom and your waistband and your belt and everything is touching the ground. I go into stalls where the, you know, there's that gap at the bottom and in multi-hole bathrooms.
Yes.
And I go in there and I see somebody has, I can see the hair on their chin, right? It's especially egregious at work when people have their ID clipped to their belt loop. And now you can see who it is.
You're like, hey, Joe. Right? Hey, Steve.
Like, Joe, pull up your goddamn pants. Jesus.
Or put your name tag on your shirt before you go in. Yeah. And it's bad enough.
I want to know
it's who. Bad enough if you recognize their shoes pretty readily. It's like, you know, they're wearing like, you see like a pair of like tan Vans. You're like, oh shit, that's George. George wore his tan Vans today. Then you can't look him in the eye.
At least I can pretend I don't know who it is if I can't see their name tag. It's enough I got to shit next to somebody. It's another human being. It's bad when I know who they are.
I used to work at this factory and we had our fork truck driver was a narcoleptic, which was... I'm just going to let that sink in for a minute. Our fork truck driver was a narcoleptic. And you'd go in the bathroom. You could hear, like, over the PA, I forget what his name is. We'll call him Bob. And the PA would be like, Bob to receiving. Bob to receiving. And, like, 2 or 3 minutes later, Bob to receiving. Then somebody would, then eventually, would somebody go in the bathroom and wake up Bob? Or you'd walk in, the bathroom would be empty, and you're like, all right, this is cool. I can kind of kick around in here for a little while. And you're hearing, like, coming out of the far stall because Bob fell asleep. So you'd walk up and, like, bang on the door real hard and run away. It's like, you know, because it's what you did.
I ain't going to lie. I have napped.
As have I. And accidentally, you know. Just nod it off and you wake up, you're like, yeah, I've been there.
You gotta be super tired because that's a pretty uncomfortable position to fall asleep in. The other thing with those automatic flushers, if you one false move,
yeah,
and it goes from, you know, the calm waters of the lagoon to fucking tsunami right up your butt. I like that I said fucking, but I said butt.
Well, because butt, it's kind of like in Kingpin where she could have said, you know, taking a good crap. You know, she could have said taking a good shit, but no, a crap was much more appropriate. True. My daughter was scared of those automated toilets. I used to have to put a piece of toilet paper, like, over the eye so she would go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you're little.
No, that's a great idea. Like, I do that
you
sometimes.
Know, well, yeah, when you want to take a nap.
Yeah, especially. Or if I don't feel like having poo water shot up my asshole. Which is most of the time.
Yeah, most of. There's that occasion where I want poo water up my butthole.
Yeah. Someday I will have poo water up my butthole. Today is not that day. Well, this. Now that we've sunk to those depths. I was actually leading up to something different than that, but once I got on the bathroom, I couldn't stop.
I don't even, where did we leave off? What the hell were we?
Well, I was talking about the convenience store, rural Michigan convenience store. And what I was going to say, because we were talking about cigarettes, is they had a, and you were talking about a $2 cigarette thrown it on the ground. They had a sign on their window next to the windowsill that said, do not put your lit cigarette on the windowsill. S-E-A-L.
And I was like, what is that for? And then I remembered when I was a smoker, I was like, once I lit a cigarette, I was smoking it till the end. I was, you know, so if I had to go into a store, and but I thought it was weird because I thought it takes no more than 6 minutes to smoke a cigarette. Why wouldn't I just hang out in front of the store for a minute, finish my cigarette, put it out, then go in the store? No, I would lay it on something, right? On the sidewalk, I guess on the windowsill, because apparently a lot of people had been doing that, enough so that they had to put a sign up. And I was just thinking, man, the weird things people do. But you light a $2 cigarette. We used to go, like, that's how we would get the bus to come in Chicago. We're waiting for the bus.
Yeah.
Like, damn, where's the bus? It's like, here, I'll light a cigarette, and then the bus will for sure come. Sure enough, here it comes. I'd do things like pinch off the end of the cigarette and put it back in the pack. If you want your entire body to smell like a mix, like somebody burned a wool rug and then dipped it in sewer water, all you got to do is pinch off the end of a lit cigarette and put it back in your cigarette pack and put that in your pocket. Oh my God. Worst smell ever.
Hey, bud, you got a spud?
No, fool, but I got a cool.
Now, I'm a feller with a heart of gold, with the ways of a gentleman, I've been told. The kind of a feller that wouldn't even harm a flea. But if me and a certain character met, the guy that invented the cigarette, I'd murder that son of a gun in the first degree. Now, it ain't cause that I don't smoke myself, and I don't reckon they hinder your health. I've smoked them all my life, and I ain't dead yet. But nicotine slaves are all the same at a petting party or a poker game. Everything's gotta stop while they have that cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hates to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette. Now in a game of chance the other night, old Dame Fortune was doing me right. The kings and the queens, they just kept on coming around. Then I got a full and I bet it high, but my bluff didn't work on a certain guy. He just kept on a-raising and a-laying the money down. Now he'd raise me and I'd raise him. I sweated blood, I got a sink or swim. He finally called and then didn't raise the bet. I said, ace is full, pal, how about you? And he said, well, I'll tell you in just a minute or two, but right now I just gotta have a cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette. The other night, I had a date with the cutest little girl in the 48 states, a hybrid uptown fancy little date. Now, she said she loved me, and it seemed to me that things were just about like they ought to be, so hand in hand, we strolled down Lover's Lane. She was oh so far from a chunk of ice, and our smooching party was going real nice, so help me, Hannah, I think I'd have been there yet. But I give her a kiss and a little squeeze, and she said, Tex, excuse me, please, but I just gotta have another cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hates to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette.
You know what I find funny about Born in the USA? You brought that up.
Are we back from break?
Oh, I don't know. You can decide that later. Welcome back to the Don't Panic Radio Show. Support the troops. Speaking of the troops, we went to an Independence Day celebration here close to home a few weeks ago on July 4th, actually.
That's a coincidence.
I just remembered the date for some weird reason. I remember the date. But So they did that thing where they have the fireworks and they're synchronized, or they try to synchronize it, or they're playing music, let's say, while the fireworks are going off. And one of the songs they chose was Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, Born in the USA. And I lean over to my wife, and it's not that I thought I had some brilliant insight or like had noticed something nobody in the world had ever noticed. Mm-hmm. It's just that I had to say it to somebody. I just lean over and I said, is it not hilarious that everybody thinks this is a patriotic song?
Yes, it is. It is hilariously ironic. That's like, who was it? Whoever the, like the mayor of New Jersey or whoever the hell it was years ago wanted to make Springsteen's Born to Run their, like their town's anthem. Now, if you ever really listen to the lyrics to that song, it's about getting the fuck out of that town. So it took them, this was well before the days of the internet, so it took them a little while to research the lyrics to go, oh, well, that doesn't really work here. We want people to stay here. That got dropped.
Well, it'd be like if Kent State in Ohio said, let's have the Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young song be our...
You know, I actually, a friend of mine went to school with, you've seen the pictures, right, of the Daisy Girl for the just before the ship broke out. A friend of mine, because she's significantly older than I am, was friends with that girl. Oh. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Not Marlo Thomas, but not that girl.
People who are much younger than we are. Well, actually, we were like babies when that happened, right?
Yeah.
Infants.
Yeah.
There was a, like, people think shit's bad now. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is look back on the 60s and go, if even one tenth of what went on in the 60s went on now with Twitter and Instagram and 24-hour news cycles, this country would just rip itself apart. I mean, it practically did back in the 60s.
Along similar lines, I've started watching the documentary series on the 80s that I think CNN put out. One of the learning channels or something put out a series. They had like the 60s, the 70s. Well, they did the 80s just recently. And we watched...
Well, let's finish the 60s before we move on to the 80s.
Yeah.
This thing in Kent State, I mean, they were protesting the Vietnam War.
Right.
The government calls out the National Guard to to what? I don't know. I'd have to go look at, like, go to Wikipedia and figure it out. But to keep the peace? Really? Yeah. We freak out if a cop sprays pepper spray on some kids, right?
Yeah.
They sent the National Guard with semi-automatic rifles with live ammunition and said, here, keep these kids in line.
Yeah.
And of course, they killed some kids and thus was born the career of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. So that's what I'm referring to. And it starts out with something. Nixon's calling four dead in Ohio. Is at Kent State University. There, you're all caught up. Right. Now, what did you want to say about the 80s?
No, the 80s documentary.
That was also a tragic decade, by the way.
Yes. Dude, like you were saying, if the Tiananmen Square protests, the march that we did on Washington during the whole, you know, nuclear arms freeze. Let's see what happened in, was it Poland? We would
Solidarnosc.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. There would be like hipsters would be throwing themselves out the windows today if that shit happened today the way it did then. That was a scary, scary decade to be alive in. And what's so crazy is I was watching the series because we were watching the one about, you know, Reagan and the nuclear arms race and the fall of the Berlin Wall and all that. They don't, And I'm not going to go off on this for too long. According to my kids, they don't teach any of that in public school.
Well, let's let's provide a service. Pick one aspect. Like, which was the most scary for you?
The most scary for me was the fact that we were a hair's breadth away from nuclear annihilation because we had a cowboy in the White House and a terrified Russian government. And they failed to realize just how devastating a war would have been until that silly... Remember that lighthearted romp of a TV movie called The Day After came out?
Yeah.
That movie...
Was that an after-school special?
Dude, that movie scared the shit out of Reagan. He went, Nancy, wait a minute.
That was the Jaws of middle America.
Yes, it was.
Like, we didn't have the ocean to be afraid of, but we had The Day After. So that was like Jaws. Nobody ever wanted to go to Lawrence, Kansas after that.
No. And that's I remember, 20 years later, driving through Kansas going, oh, shit, let's just get to the other side,
So would you say that's the scariest for you? Do you mean while you were watching the documentary, or do you mean when you were a kid?
As a kid, we were told that any minute the missiles could go flying, and that scared the hell out of me as a teenager, because we were teenagers in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember any specific moments of that fear,
I can go back a little bit as far as the fear. I can remember going back a little bit further. Now, you remember what we had to do? We go in the hallway, we crouch down, we put the book over our head.
So that was a tornado drill.
Yes, it was a tornado drill, but it was a holdover from the nuclear drills, from the bomb threat.
Well, it was placebo, just like the bomb threat drill.
Yes.
Ducking and covering and getting under your desk during a nuclear explosion ain't going to do shit, right? It just makes you feel like you're doing something.
And it makes the bodies easier to find.
If a tornado hits your school and all you've done is sit in the hallway with a book over your head.
I remember thinking, what if a big chunk of rock falls from the ceiling and hits me in the back? I'm like paralyzed from the waist down. And that terrified the hell out of me. But as far as the 80s go, I don't have any one particular moment that scared the hell out of me. I just remember being scared all the time that, the Russians were going to start throwing missiles at us, and the president wanted to put a laser beam in space like Dr. Evil, and it was just a terrifying time to be alive.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if I was more afraid of nuclear war or Jesus Christ coming back in the rapture, like at a moment that I had forgotten to say my prayers.
or if you were on the toilet.
Yeah, what if I was on the toilet in the rapture?
They didn't check that bathroom. They're like, you step out. There's a story for you. You were in the bathroom during the rapture.
Or even if they remembered me, they'd like bust in. You're like, okay, come on, we're going to heaven. I'd be like, but I'm not done. They'd be like, I can't even relax for fear that the rapture might happen while I'm sitting on this toilet. I might have the most secure lock in the world on the door, but I still can't relax. Because ain't no bathroom lock going to hold Jesus back. I mean, right?
Well, no. Quite the contrary. Because he would, he'd knock and you'd have to open the door. So you're like, just Jesus, a minute.
You have to accept. Jesus ain't going to force his way into your heart.
That's right.
Heart.
You're going to be like, say you're in that bathroom in rural Michigan that says to knock. And you're like, here's Jesus, right?
Jesus knocks.
And you're like, I'll be out in a minute. And Jesus just like, okay. And he walks away. And you miss it.
Jesus would be like, pinchest thou it off. You're like, what do you mean pitchest it off. I don't even know what you're saying. Thou shalt pitchest it off. Off shalt thou pitchest it. What are, is this Yoda or Jesus? Who is this?
It is easier for... I don't even know where to go with that. But it's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle.
Easier to fit a camel through the head of a needle or the eye of a needle than it would for me to pinchest this off.
That's what I was trying to say.
Because right now I'm having a little problem because I'm on vacation. I never eat right when I'm on vacation. I don't get enough vegetables. And you know that. You're an all-knowing, all-seeing whatever you are. And you know that. And you come to me in the middle of when I'm trying to relax. I even have my feet up like I found. I got the garbage can here, and I got my feet up on the garbage can so I can get in that position, you know, that you're supposed to get in to make sure you get it all out. And you choose now for the rapture? Really? You've had over 2,000 years. And you choose now.
Or
he's like, well, my son, someone is always trying to take a shit. How do I choose?
Or you just fell asleep in there.
Yeah. He's like.
He's in there like, you're snoring. He's like, Steve, come forth. Steve, come forth. Come forth. or as a callback to an earlier show, he'd be like, Steve, come forth. And you'd be like, I can only do it twice.
Come forth. I've already come three. I can't come forth. He'd be like, come on, motherfucker. We're going to be late. Come on, motherfucker.
That's the American Jesus.
Well, Jesus cusses. Great.
So,
so anyway, where were we? What were we talking about? We're going to do headlines, weren't we?
Headlines. Maybe we should.
Kid Rock hints at potential U.S. Senate run in Michigan. Senator Rock. So I think when a lot of people first hear Senator Rock, they'll think either Sean Connery or The Rock will have been
well,
elected.
The Rock is... and then they'll go... The Rock is thinking about running for president. Have you heard about that?
Oh, that was on Saturday Night Live. I don't know if that was serious or not.
Oh, well, I read the article
Tom
today.
Tom Hanks was going to be his VP.
Oh, okay. Maybe that wasn't. Okay, and we'll scratch that from the record.
That's all right. Senator Rock. Wait. The? No, Kid. You mean Dwayne the Rock Johnson? Rock Johnson. It's like a B-52 song. Fucking Stuart Smiley's a senator. Why not Kid Rock?
Right. Have you seen that horrible PSA that Kid Rock and... hold on here. Sean, the PSA that Kid Rock and Sean Penn did?
No.
Where, like... You know, Sean Penn is the ultra-liberal, and Kid Rock is, the ultra-conservative. And then they're arguing with each other, and then they hear about some soldiers getting killed, and they come together. It's... You want to talk about putting two people in this world that I could give zero fucks about, and you're going to have these two people... Try to convince me that it's, support the troops. Have you seen that commercial?
No, I was trying to figure out if Caitlyn Jenner gave him a Pepsi.
That would be a much more entertaining commercial. No, it was a support the troops commercial. And it was so horrible, and I can't stand either one of those two, so.
Was it like this? I didn't see it, but I could imagine if I were writing it, it would be, we may disagree on a lot of things, like healthcare, the taking away of our rights, TSA molesting our daughters and our wives, and sometimes our brothers and fathers. We can disagree on whether or not the NSA should be conducting surveillance on private citizens. We can disagree on immigration and abortion. But when it comes to the men and women who volunteer to take up arms and kill people in other countries under the name of the USA, we cannot disagree. That's where I draw the line, says Sean Penn and Kid Rock.
That's essentially, yes. It's horrible.
It is true, though. I mean, I don't care where you fall on issues of the day, whatever they may be, Reaganomics or flag burning or whatever. We should all come together around the brave men and women who join our military completely voluntarily, usually for the money.
I was going to say, can you say voluntarily and get paid?
Yeah, I thought volunteering meant you don't get paid. Anyway.
That's like I volunteered for that job.
Hey, you're starting to sound like a commie pinko to me. So straighten up. I'm talking about our brave men and women who voluntarily join so they can get paid and get the GI Bill, wear the uniform, because they have no other options, and because they assume that out of the 4 million U.S. servicemen and women, only like a few thousand end up in combat. So they don't assume they're going to get shot at or shit on or any of that. And but they're brave men and women, right? Don't forget that. They might be deployed to a combat zone in a little an area the size of Texas with a giant wall around it, but it's still a combat zone. And you're trying to tell me that we can't agree on supporting them? Is that what you're telling me?
Support the troops.
That's all I'm saying. I have been listening. I've been listening to this podcast recently. I learned about it in a group I follow on Facebook. That is a Dan Carlin group, you know, a hardcore history guy. And they were talking about this other guy that's like, he's not as good as Dan, but he's still pretty good. And he covers the recent history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, right?
Yeah.
And he goes through all the details and all the history of everything. And he just opens it all up like filleting a fish, right? Once you open up that fish and just like lay it out on the table, you see everything. Mm-hmm. You know, no longer have any like, oh, this is like Nemo or Dory the fish. You know, what a pretty fish. Look at the beauty. No, you see the guts. You see everything. Mm-hmm. And then the whole notion of support the troops, you go, yeah, you know, it takes a special kind of person to lay down their life for something they believe in and to protect their way of life and loved ones and all this stuff. But then he makes the point, and it's totally unrelated necessarily. It's not totally unrelated, but it's not specific to, that's what I'm trying to say. It's not specific to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He says one of the important things in any nation is having a common mythology or a common, don't even use the word mythology because that's loaded with,
yeah,
you know, that's a loaded term. So use a common like focus.
Yeah.
And often, you know, often they use the others or the threat, mm-hmm. right? Like North Korea right now, the only thing holding them together is the whole idea that the entire, you know, West wants to annihilate them, right?
Yes.
And so our buddy Kim Jong-un, you know, that's what he tells his people. He's like, if you don't have me, they're just going to come in here and kill all of you. Mm-hmm. That's what holds them together. Mm-hmm. If you look at like ancient, you know, like Great Britain in the Middle Ages, it was a Christian thing. If you look at the Ottoman Empire, it was a Muslim thing. Mm-hmm. If you look, you know, so then when you look at the United States, what do we have? We really, I mean, we're from everywhere.
Yeah.
So there's not like, hey, we're proud Irishmen or we're proud Italians. It's like, no, we're from everywhere. So what really holds this whole thing together is a common, I'll call it mythology because I can't really think of a better word, but, you know.
I know what you mean.
This whole freedom, and if we don't protect our freedom by using violence, it will be taken from us.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning by Great Britain, and then through the years, it's been, you know, take your pick.
Yeah.
Great Britain, Spain, Germany again.
those wacky Germans.
Soviet Union, Muslims, you know. It's always and it's not about like just trying to create a fake enemy and go, oh, if we don't do something, they'll come kill us. It's not that. It's more like we believe in freedom and democracy. That's what holds us together.
Mm-hmm.
We believe in liberty, freedom, and democracy, no matter where you're from. And then if it ended there, people would just kind of go, yeah, doesn't everybody? How's that? Why is that? So you need the follow-on thing, which would go, and nobody else does, like other people kind of do, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
Like Europe, they're really socialists. And Australia, well, that's Australia. And look, the Muslims hate freedom. They hate our freedom. They hate our way of life. They want to kill all of us. And thank God for Israel, because they're, you know, they're in the teeth of the tiger. And so I know it's controversial, and I know not supporting the troops is not an option. So by all means, if we're going to put this out there in the internet, I totally support the troops. I'm basically saying what other people believe. I don't believe any of what I just said. I totally support the troops and our way of life. And yes, the Muslims want to take it from us. So let's check out our Facebook question of the day answers.
All right.
So what we have here is the album most important to you growing up. Go. Melinda Kaiser says, The Wall by Pink Floyd.
Oh,
that's pretty good.
That's a big one.
Laura Kestner says, Billy Joel. Did Billy Joel have an album called Billy Joel, or is she just saying the person?
I'm going to bet she means the Glass Houses album. That seems
why didn't she say that then?
Maybe she doesn't know it has a name that's that important to her. I could be wrong.
If you were MP Cavalier, what would you say?
No.
He says Quadrophenia.
Oh, I thought you meant her in response to her album choice. Yeah, no, I totally would have figured him for Quadrophenia.
Oh, come on.
No, I would have figured him for like the Ramones or Lou Reed or something.
Wasn't Quadrophenia, wasn't that Fred Sanford's aunt or something? Quadrophenia, you so ugly, I can stick your face in some dough and make some gorilla cookies.
Do, 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 do.
What do you suppose Sue Ann Schultz Stark said?
The Bob Seger Silver Bullet Band Live.
No.
Oh!
But I will tell you, she says her father bought it for her, which says a lot if you know him. It says he loved his daughters, but not his sons, is what it says.
That's exactly what it says.
It's Tusk, Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, he did buy that for her. I would have figured it for Bob Seger, but that's crazy. But I remember when that happened. But go ahead, sorry.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do not ever apologize for talking. If I learned anything from the Superfan James episode, it is that I don't let you talk enough. I also learned that I try to get you to talk. And then I also learned
that
I'm not as good as those people that get paid to do improv and the people that get paid to do comedy and perform for a living. I learned I'm not as good as them. I also learned that I'm good, but I still have a lot of work to do. I learned those things from that episode.
When he had said that about the improv guys, what the audience didn't hear was about 2 minutes of me just kind of blinking. Like, I'm waiting for him to like make a joke about it, but he was serious. Yeah.
I love Superfan Gene. And I love the fact that he will go out of his way to come up with criticism.
Yes.
Because it's like, you know, not that I need the ego stroking. It's nice, but I don't really need it. But it was nice, and I'm listening to it. I'm going, oh, these guys care. And then he's like, well, yeah, but you know that one obscure episode from like over a year ago? The one that neither of you really cared for too much, and MP made fun of. And it was just really an experiment anyway. He wasn't as good as those people. It's like, okay, so one out of 127 episodes. All right, anyway. Shannon Troska says, Lost Boys soundtrack.
That's a good one. Had a lot of
doesn't
good.
Doesn't that have... Oh, no, that was Cat People.
Yeah, I know.
Keith Hodling, Revolver by the Beatles. Speaking of Superfan James, Ringmaster by Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah, he was all about the ICP.
Now back to people our age. John Rapp. What? I don't even know John Rapp. Led Zeppelin 4. Is he related to John Leslie? Because that would be...
They're spiritual relatives.
Eagles, Hotel California, or Moody Blues, Future Days of Future Past.
That's a good one.
Andy Gibbs, Shadow Dancing. All right. Eat it, highbrow music snobs. That was Jill Greer. So I'm going to put Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Bee Gees. John Mellencamp, American Fool, the Red and Blue Greatest Hits albums by the Beatles. That's Leslie White. Dan Grill, R.E.M.'s Murmur. Monica Eskridge, my cousin, just posted a GIF of Michael Jackson dancing with zombies.
Ah.
John Nepsha, I don't know him. I don't think. Graceland by Paul Simon. And finally, Dwayne Long says Purple Rain. Not finally.
I guess they're re-releasing Purple Rain, like some kind of super deluxe, you know, hitherto unheard of clear version of it.
Yeah, I think the title of it is supposed to be The Revolution Needs Money.
That's right. Speaking of Prince, today would have been Charlie Murphy's birthday. So there's that.
Charlie Murphy.
That's right. He'll be missed.
You and your posse against me and the revolution. This bores me. How about we play some basketball? Love it. So that's it. That's it for now. I'm sure we'll get 500 more.
Yeah, but the one time we plan on doing it the following week, you'll get nobody. So,
right,
we're just going right. to play it by ear, man.
That's right. So I think that's a little something I like to call a show.
Episode 128?
Yeah, 128. Yes. Episode 128. And it's been a joy, as always. Thank you for joining me tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, I'm like, you always wonder about that, especially on NPR. It's like everybody's already rehearsed it. They'll go,
yeah,
this is Alice, this is Chesterfield Station. We've been talking with the Minister of Internal State Affairs of Zimbabwe, Mr. Ogogab Agumukin. Thank you for joining us. It has been my pleasure. Thank you.
You sound like George Takei.
It is a papillon.
Oh my.
Thank you. Oh, my.
And if the Don't Panic radio show is anything, it is unrehearsed. So.
That's right. And we can make one promise to our listeners, and one promise only.
What's that?
It will never, ever be rehearsed. Except for this part, which I've rehearsed now 127 times, about to be 128. For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson. This has been the Don't Panic Radio Show. DontPanicRadioShow.com. Nothing,
you just heard,
was true.